Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Hello, this is the Chris DeGhenny Forum call, and it's Monday, February 15th, 2010. How you doing, Bruce?
Good. Good, Bill.
How you doing? You get your truck fixed?
Oh, no, no. It's got to go into the shop in the morning. Overheating problems, you know.
Wow.
I wish we'd be overheating.
Okay, that's a shame. I mean, what are you, still stuck in the same place where you broke down?
No, I drove empty to Columbus from Hebron, and it heated up, so I have to bring it into the Cummins shop tomorrow morning. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, I hope you delivered that load you picked up in Syracuse.
Yeah, I got it 30 miles away from Columbus. Some other fellow picked it up. He was kind of red hot about it, but.
Oh, well.
Well.
Truck's broke, it's broke, right? Can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
So what are we doing today? That much, huh?
How many folks are on the line here with us, Bill?
Oh, not too many.
Oh. What is that? Maybe there's some other folks in this.
Well, if people call in, we'll have a program. If they don't call in, we probably won't have much of a program. I don't know. I should start reciting Psalm 49's in front of me. I mean, actually, I was reading the end of Psalm 48. I was kind of hoping Troublemaker would show up and try to scold me for Saturday, but I don't care.
Oh, yeah. You're banned.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk about Judah, and I didn't want a distraction. You know, I wanted to talk about the marriage relationship, and there's a lot of wrong ideas on that, and I didn't want the distraction. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl, you've sent me a lot of pictures, and I can't, you know, I look at 1,000 pictures a day, and I can't remember which one you sent. I'm sorry. I'm not. I look at all my email, but I can't remember whose is whose when it's especially a lot of that stuff, 2-3 people sent me the same thing. In fact, you sent me something, and then Don Brown sent it a short time later. So it's, I can't remember who sent what. Sorry, I have it all. Gerald's asking me in a forum if I like the picture he sent me. I'm trying to unmute Pilgrim. I think maybe my
Hi there.
Hello, Pilgrim. How you doing?
Okay. How are you?
All right. I'm looking at an audio module for this Swift site that's going up, and I'm experimenting with it on my personal site, and I think I'm going to use it on Chris DeGhenny first.
Oh, cool.
If it does what it's advertised to do, I'll be experimenting with it today and tomorrow. But it would be real nice for the Swift site, too, because there's going to be a lot of audios on that site.
Oh, that would be nice. Yeah, it froze up on me the other night. I don't know if you got my PM yet at the forum.
Oh, you know, I don't. PMs are the last thing I look at. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. There's people who think I'm going to get PMs first, and
I have
to go out of my way to get to the forum, and it doesn't happen right away.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Saturday was a great show. Let's hope it holds. I mean, not only was the show great, it really was very good, but No Troublemaker was delightful.
Yeah, I know. It's a much more peaceful. I don't know. Some people get upset that you know, to see anybody get blocked, but when
oh, you can block wolves and heretics anytime.
When 50 people get their fellowship ruined, it's a trade-off. I mean, what can you do?
Really?
I don't know. Do we have 50 people in peace, relative peace anyway, or do we have one wolf get tossed? I mean, I don't think the troublemaker is ever going to come around to any normal, decent biblical scholarship.
No, he is what he is. He's not changing.
I'd really rather talk about them with them here, though, believe it or not. I mean,
yeah, I just think it's probably more relaxing and easier on the blood pressure not having him around, because he's just a giant frustration. He ends up he's on the phone, people are screaming at him there, and if he's in the chat room, they're screaming at him there.
Well, right, it's aggravating. There's no doubt. He's so obstinate. If he wasn't so obstinate, it wouldn't be so aggravating.
Or if he was sincere.
Yeah, he's not sincere at all. He's only a wolf. He's only here to subvert and to take our time, and he relishes that, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Create a disturbance. I'm sure he relishes all of that. That's why he sends out 70 emails a day to saying trite things, trite and ridiculous things to people.
Yes. Yes.
And I know I have them. It's not an exaggeration. I have them.
I'm sure. I'm still curious why he is so reluctant to put his photograph up. Maybe he's afraid someone in an internet search will come across it. Maybe he's got other names.
Well, he did send Gerald a copy, and Gerald forwarded it to me today.
Yes.
Well, I already had it. I already had that copy.
Yeah,
it's the same photo the troublemaker sent me.
Yeah, but you won't put it up, but you said, you know.
Well, I wouldn't put even my worst enemy's photo on a net without, well, I might do some Jews, I mean. I wouldn't put your photo up. I wouldn't put anybody's photo up.
Oh, no, and under normal.
You know, let them put it up.
Under normal conditions, I agree with you. You're absolutely right. But under the circumstances with him and his bragging about being so public, I don't know why he is so, he knows you won't put it up. Why doesn't he insist you put it up?
Right, Dave, the cops got photos of me, too. But that's okay. They could have them. I don't think he knows how to put anything up on the Internet.
Oh, I told him I'd be glad to do it for him.
Well, I don't know. We shouldn't even waste our time with him.
Yes.
So what else is going on? Why did that site crash on you last night?
I don't know. It said something about running a bad script. I got one note put in on the welcome page, and I went in to make a revision, and it started freezing and crashing my browser window. And when I went back in at one point, it gave me a message about it's running a bad JavaScript and will make your computer run slow. Do you want to, you know, terminate?
What browser is that?
Internet Explorer.
Well, that's the problem. I would guarantee it. I don't know. It's Internet Explorer is. I would try Firefox. Do you have Firefox?
I have it on my machine. I almost never use it. I can try using that.
Try Firefox. Upgrade your Firefox to 3.6 though, and try that. You'll have a much better time. I'd assure you.
Okay.
Drupal once in a while it gives my Opera browser a hard time, but only with things I expect it to, because I know that Opera has a couple of problems.
Yeah.
But Firefox, I never have a problem.
Okay.
Never. And I stopped using Internet Explorer. I use it once in a while. Like I tried it tonight because Firefox crashed. I tried it to get into TalkShoe Pro. It handles TalkShoe Pro, and Firefox doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And not for me. And when that failed, I went back to Firefox to get in on it. I'm here on the telephone line.
Oh, okay. All right.
Obadiah, this program is what the callers make it. I mean, if people call in, that's what I talk about. I don't have anything prepared for this program. I'm sorry. I do three prepared programs a week, two with Eli and one with Sword Brethren. I put a lot of preparation into those programs, and that's the end of my chain. This is a forum program. This program is what the people who desire to call in make it. And I'll talk about whatever you call in about. That's the way it is. I'm sorry, but I can't do a prepared program four nights a week. Today I did website development all day. I know that might sound selfish, but I just can't do it.
Well, I thought I'd call in and sort of prime the pump and keep you company until, because it always takes a while for this to warm up here.
Yeah, it usually does. I appreciate it. I do. I can't sit here and sing. I just can't do it.
So what do you think?
I'd be the only person in the forum.
I would bring up current events, but I really don't watch the news. The only thing I know about at the moment is the crazy Jewish college professor who shot all those people.
A Jewish college professor? Let me hear about this.
Well, at least that's what Judicial Inc. is claiming, she's Jewish.
Okay, well, I don't know. Okay.
University of Alabama.
Totally isolated from everything. I don't watch the news. I don't have a television that I watch. I don't. If I don't get it in my email or in my forum, I don't get it, because all I do is read web development and biblical literature, and that's it.
Well, apparently this – I'll try to find the Judicial Inc. Link, because, of course, he'll discuss it in different ways than the news will. But she was in a meeting being considered for tenure, University of Alabama or someplace in Alabama, and they said, no, you don't get it. And she went haywire and shot about six people. Three of them died. Several were in critical condition. And, you know, that's the crux of it. I guess she was unhappy. She did have a history. She had killed her brother 20 years before with a shotgun. And
wow.
There's rumors at Judicial Inc. she was involved in some bombing plot, but I don't know how accurate that is.
Wow.
She killed her brother? Is she still walking around?
Yeah, she killed her brother with a shotgun. Got mad at him.
Oh.
Let me see. I'll find that link here.
Well, she must be a Jew. I mean, you know, she's a liberal, but I would,
yes.
If she's Jewish, that then the media will probably suppress that. They don't let us know that, you know, the Klebold kid and all those Jewish kids that were the actual perpetrators behind a lot of those school shootings. We
yeah.
never hear that.
Father's a millionaire. He's been a CEO in like six takeovers, according to Judicial Inc. Got some bad student reviews, arrogant, thought she was hot stuff.
Right, Kent, that's exactly what, or Guest 7, that's exactly what they do is smear. That they even tried to make the Colorado school shooters goth kids, they were calling them, goth kids. They were Jews. They weren't goth kids.
Okay, well, here's the link, and it's the top story in the middle. It will probably take 10 minutes for this post to come through. Oh, there it is.
It came right away.
Yeah. The top box in the center is her.
That son underneath her, that mother and son, what a couple that is. He's half of something. He looks like he's half alien. He looks like something from the front of a Whitney Strieber novel. Wow.
Ma Feldman.
I didn't think people really look like that. Yes, he's definitely a Jew. There's no doubt. Now this school teacher, I don't know. It's hard to tell from one picture.
Oh, click on the story. The text underneath the story will take you to the story.
Yeah, that's not a very good website.
No, but the basics that he has there are being reported in the news. And the ads, whether or not the stuff he adds is solid, you know, is up for you to decide. He does have links to some supporting information, but.
Okay. Yeah, it don't, you know, from her look, it could go either way. I mean, not all Jews look Jewish. It's you hang around them long enough, you know who they are, but some are harder to tell than others.
There's a father of Seth Bishop, multimillionaire, named Samuel Solomon Bishop.
Oh, well, he's got it. He's absolutely a Jew.
He's been the CEO in eight turnarounds, a There's a nice little photo there of his.
There is no doubt he's a Jew. I'd bet tomorrow's lunch on that.
Yeah.
Incredible. This just froze on me. It's not loading. But I'm you know, I started a huge upload of files to Chris DeGhenia today, and I had hoped that it would be over before the program, and it's not quite over. Almost. So my internet connection is a little slow.
Top Shoe's acting up tonight. It's very, very, very laggy.
Well, the internet's a busy place.
Yeah.
There it goes. No, I'm back on the front page. This website's terrible. I wouldn't even know there was a link under there. Oh, there we go. She may have had accomplices, blah, blah, blah. The three dead, they don't upset me at one bit.
Oh, no, the dead are not bad.
She did a huge favor for us. I mean, this woman.
Do need
she's
not
white. I could see her face. Now, no, she is definitely a Jewess. Now, I would guarantee it. Yeah, yeah. Harvard-trained biology professor, Amy Bishop, Jewish. Yep. Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it one bit. And so the Jews are killing the Negroes now. That's great.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah, they're all at each other now.
Hateful cows divided against themselves. That's wonderful. I mean, it doesn't always work out that way, but.
What university was that there, Gilbert?
The University of Alabama.
University of Alabama.
A second Jewess was arrested, and all I had to do was see the nose on that face. And that's perfect. I mean,
it's like a hatchet, huh?
Della Hunt said he was traveling in Israel and said it could not be reached. He's a congressman. Of course he's traveling in Israel.
Uh-huh.
That's just incredible. I don't know. When I see the news, I just get angry. I'm better off staying away from the news. But sometimes we can laugh at it.
I run across news stories on the internet. I really never watch it. I don't know what's going on out there either.
I posted a few interesting news stories to the Chris DeGhenia forum at various times. But there's one gentleman in South Africa that sends me those, and he's very sporadic.
Yeah.
So I'm even more sporadic putting them up, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, being a white guy in South Africa, it would, you know, being sporadic would probably be normal. Yeah, I know that, James, that I acknowledge them. I mean, I unmuted them. Hello, Frenchman. Hello, Obadiah.
Hello, Bill. I got a biblical question, and when you're ready.
Sure, shoot.
Hey, I had a discussion with another pastor, and he was saying that there was only 8 white people on the earth after Noah. And I got into a discussion with him that I tend to disagree with him, that the families of Enoch and Job, that not all Adamites were in the Tarim Basin where the great flood occurred. And he went on about a worldwide flood, and then I knew it was a lost cause. But what references do you use about the family of Enoch? The daughters of Enoch were the wives of Noah's sons. And Enoch, he was down busy in Egypt building the temples in the city of On and Heliopolis and all those places with it throughout Egypt.
Let me make some reservations.
Okay.
Reservations. All right. I know Wesley Swift, and he was a great man, and Bertrand Comperet, he was a great man. And I know that's the first places that I read some of that. But I've never seen it documented.
Okay.
So that's my reservation. And I've studied, I haven't read everything. No man can. I've read as much as I could.
Right.
I've far from read everything. But I haven't seen anything that actually documented any of that. And that's my reservation, all right? But let me say this, that, you know, to show that the flood is not global, all you have to do is go to the Bible and look at the Kenites and how did the Kenites survive? And they're mentioned in Genesis chapter 15.
Right.
And who were the Girgashites? And there's a couple of the Kenizzites that don't have any lineage to that don't have any lineage to Genesis 10 for those nations.
Right.
They have no identification whatsoever with them.
And that's when I have to use parascriptural and secular sources, such as the works of Adam Rutherford, Capt, people like that, some of the ancient archaeologists along the lines of that, you know, the Harold Lambs and people like that that had done a lot of ancient archaeology, the races and things.
Well, right, that's great, but I'm talking about me personally. I'm not saying that anybody else can't have a more knowledge on the topic, believe me. There are certainly people that can. But me personally, I'm a very pragmatic guy, and I like to see it. If I can't show it to you in an ancient book, I'm very hesitant to repeat it, and when I do repeat it, it's always with reservations.
Okay.
And that's just my own practice, and I think that's for the better.
Yeah.
Now, from the point of the flood, it's very possible that white sub-tribes wandered off from the main body of the Adamic race in between the time of Adam and the flood.
Right.
It's very possible that happened, and it's very possible that they survived the flood. However, let me state that all of the white nations that we know in history can be traced back to Genesis chapter 10. If any of those whites that may have wandered off before the flood, and if any of the pre-Diluvian, you know, whites that wandered off before the flood had a civilization anywhere, there's no real tangible record of it.
The Hyksos kings?
This is Obadiah 83. Can I ask you something about the flood?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, do you believe that the flood actually took place in the Tarim Basin?
No, I don't. I would hold reservations about that, too. I read Haberman and I read Swift, but that's not proven.
So if it didn't happen in the Tarim Basin, then where would you suggest the Garden of Eden was?
Well, the Black Sea. Well, first let me qualify that word Eden. The word Eden is the same, that word that the Assyrians and the Sumerians used to describe a steppe. The word is a very common word in ancient Sumerian and Akkadian inscriptions. In fact, it appears in the Epic of Gilgamesh quite often. And it's
Where exactly in the Epic of Gilgamesh?
It appears in the Epic of Gilgamesh. I know that the word Edun appears.
Okay. All right.
Okay, and my source for the Epic of Gilgamesh would be Princeton University, 1969, James Pritchard, Ancient Near Eastern Texts Related to the Old Testament.
Okay.
Which is on a shelf behind me.
Okay.
Now the word means it means the steppe or the grasslands is basically what it means. So the Garden of Eden could very well be just the garden on the steppes. Yeah, you know what I mean?
But could it also be the Pamir Plateau?
Well, the Pamir Plateau is actually near the steppes. You know, I mean, I'm not going to disqualify it, but I'm not going to say that that's where the flood was.
Sure.
I'm going to say I don't know because I believe that I can be mature enough to understand that we can't know everything. And I wouldn't make an assertion and defend something that I can't be 100% positive about.
Sure.
To me, that's the scholarly approach. And there's, you know, there's a good argument can be put up for the Black Sea at actually being the location, the original location.
Sure. Now, yeah, I wanted to ask you something else, Mr. Singh, and also for the benefit of the listeners. I thought for quite some time that there should be some type of catechism of Christian identity beliefs. Do you think that if we have a catechism, of course, built upon the foundations of, you know, institutes of the Christian religion, do you believe that would help to give Christians, identity Christians, a unity of purpose?
Well, yeah, you know, when I don't have enough time. I tried to do that with the overview section on Christogenia, and it's really a project that I have to get back to. And I'm not saying I'm the be-all and end-all by any means. I don't think we'll find enough identity pastors that agree 100% on, or 99% on enough things in order to have such a catechism would be difficult to do. Pastor Lynch,
you know, it was also difficult for the Westminster Confession of Faith, but we see that in areas where everybody wasn't unanimous, they left it sort of vague. Do you think that we could start out doing something like that? Would you yourself be willing to devote some amount of time and energy towards a catechism?
Well, my end product would be what you see on my overview pages now. Basically, I mean, I could always expound further on it, but that would probably, that reflects my positions. And there are places where we can have disagreement and not kill each other. But those places, I wouldn't leave it vague. I would present both arguments. And if you read my overview on Genesis chapter 2, I attempted to do that concerning the the dispute between Clifton Emmaheiser and Eli James as to whether or not they were hominids in the beast creation. That's one example. That's the primary example I have of that approach, to explain both arguments and to understand that we can't possibly know with any certainty. That is the scholarly way to do it, I think, that then rather than pick a team and take a side and bash the other guy until you win.
Well, there's that old saying, you worship Yahweh your way, and I'll worship him his way. You know, that's the attitude of most of us.
Well, right. I talked
as far as knowledge goes.
I talked about this at in some degree on Saturday. Things like Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. A lot of people think that should say the earth became void. I'm not of that school, but I don't beat those people over the head. I understand why they think that. And I can't prove it in one way or another. I mean, we just weren't here 8,000 years ago or 8 billion years ago or whatever. We don't know the exact history of the planet. So I'm not going to beat anybody over the head because they disagree with me about that. Yeah. I will beat somebody over the head because they try to claim that Yahshua wasn't from the tribe of Judah. And there's so many witnesses that tell us that, that's a different type of disagreement. But there are things that we don't know, and there are things that we can't know. And my assertion would be that we don't take a side, that we outline the possibilities and explain them and understand them.
Sure. Now, sir, let me ask you this. In regards to the single seed liners and the dual seed liners, do you believe that is something we should beat over each other over the head?
Well, absolutely, because, I mean, there's two sets of descendants in Genesis 3:15. And
yeah.
I'm not going to give any credence to the people that deny that.
Yeah, I believe you're absolutely right.
I have at least three scriptural witnesses. And actually, I have more than that, but I've written papers on that, and I've helped Clifton with his papers, and Clifton's wrote a lot of excellent papers on that. And there's some things that I can't agree with. To me, one seed liners, they're not identity.
No, I agree.
I say that because to me, Christian identity, and I know a lot of other people try to take the term for their, for their own means, but Christian identity, we identify the parties of the creation of God. We identify the parties of the Bible, not just the Christians, but all the parties of the Bible. They're all here today in the world. So that's my opinion.
Basically, the one seed liner is a universalist, communist, Marxist.
Well, one seed line opens the door for universalism. There's no, when you actually sit down and think it through, that there's think it through from a philosophical viewpoint. One seed line opens the door for universalism. There's no doubt.
Oh, you're absolutely right. A little bit of leaven leavens the whole lump.
Thank you. So there's some things that I could there's some things I could agree on people with, and some things I just can't. But basically, I think that my position, let's go through the whole Bible.
Yeah.
And we'll, I've been there with the one seed liners, and they start denying verses. And when they start denying verses, I'm done with them. Then I start treating them like troublemaker.
Like Jehovah's Witness. like Jehovah's Witnesses that deny certain parts of the scripture that point to Christ being God in the flesh.
Absolutely. And he absolutely was God in the flesh. And that's another thing that that if I were to take part in a catechism, that's another position it would have to not compromise.
Oh, absolutely. It could not conflict with, I believe, anything in Luther's catechism or the Institutes of the Christian Religion.
Well, right. But I don't, it's not that I disrespect Luther. And my scholarship ends at the Old Testament. I'm not really concerned with anything after the Old Testament. In other words, anything after the Old Testament are just other men's interpretations. And it's nice to see how Origen and Jerome and the earliest people interpreted things, but there are flaws in their interpretations also.
Absolutely. There's something else I wanted to touch on, too. Speaking of John Calvin, the sovereignty of God, basically the five principles of Calvinism, the 5 points of Calvinism, rather.
Right. To me, Calvin has a major flaw. Calvin has one major flaw. Before I even investigate anything else, he has one major flaw. He accepted the redefinition of the word usury. And that was when that was done by the Medicis in the 16th century and the Catholic Church redefined usury, Calvin followed them. And that let the beast out of the pit. And I know that was meant to be, but that doesn't mean I have to like it, and that doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, thank you for pointing me in that direction. I will definitely study that. Now, do you believe that, the principles of the depravity of man, unconditional election, the sovereignty of God, and especially in regards to Adam, salvation of an individual Adamic man, do you believe that to be true and correct, that God is sovereign and he chooses which sinner will come to him, that we don't have any free will whatsoever to do that on our own?
Well, I look at that just a little differently. We have free will. We absolutely have free will. We have a choice. But Yahweh, being sovereign and being God, cannot help but know which way we're going to go.
And does that not mean that he's commanded it?
No, it's our choice. It's our choice. Yeah, we make the choice. With Yahweh being God, he can't help but know which way we're going to go. I know that's a philosophical concept that it can be debated all day, but that's my position in it. And that's I'm probably
sure.
Well, not,
I can't,
you know,
first, the chicken or the egg. I understand.
Exactly. It's the same sort of, we have free will. The angels have free will. But Yahweh is God, and he made us, and he knew that Esau was going to be a race mixer. So we hated him from the womb. And he hated the race mixing. But he knew Esau was going to do that. And that's why he created him. And that's, that's the vessel of mercy and the vessel of destruction, made from the same lump of clay, as Paul explains it in Romans chapter 9. That's the way it is.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I've heard this Calvinist thing, argued back and forth, as I've heard them define how one can have free will yet not have free will at the same time. But how about the statement that I'll not lose one my Father gives me? What's the giving?
That giving happened, at the dawn of time. Happened with the conception of the race.
That's what I'm saying. So if you'll not lose one that my Father gives me, do you read that as...
That two ways. I'm sorry. That statement can be taken two ways. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The first way is that Christ is speaking of the entire creation. But if you go back and read it again, he very well could only be speaking of the 12 apostles. I won't lose one of them except the son of perdition, who is mm-hmm. Judas. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that statement that Christ made can be interpreted two ways.
Yes, I understand you.
So that's, in the wider sense, who's the son of perdition? A lot of people say, oh, that's Adam. Well, no, it's not Adam. It could be the son of heaven that rebelled, you know, the Satan, the Azazel or whatever, whichever mm-hmm. apocryphal book you want to understand that with.
Okay, Mr. Fink, I'm looking here on the chat page, and it, I noticed that a lot of the people are under the impression that Calvin was actually a Jew. That says here Calvin was named Cohen, spelled Calvin.
But that doesn't matter to me or not. What matters to me with Calvin is that he accepted usury and redefined the word outside of the biblical terms of the word. And that was done to satisfy the bankers. That was done to satisfy the wolves. It was done by the De Medicis, who were actually bankers, when they became popes. It was done by Calvin, and it was done later by Cotton Mather, who taught the acceptance of usury in New England Baptist churches, in New England Puritan churches. I did a program on that I didn't, you know, I had way too much material to cover than I had time for. And I tried to squeeze it all in, and it could have been a better program if I'd actually carved out some of the material. And that was on the 9-9, you know, on September 9th last year.
Now, Mr. Finn, can I change the subject for a second?
Sure.
I've never called into your call here,
just call me Bill, by the way. I'm a pretty informal guy. I'm just Bill.
Okay, Bill. Yeah, call me Obi. I didn't listen to any of your other calls that were recorded, but I have read some of a track or two of yours and some stuff from Clifton Emmaheiser that I was blessed with while I was in prison. And I really liked it. I liked the scholarship of it. It made me want to learn Greek. And I've since taken little Greek studies, and I'm proficient with, you know, the Hatch and Redpath concordance to the Septuagint. And, you know, my Septuagint and my Josephus here. I've got a parsing guide to the Greek New Testament. I can find my way around a concordance or a lexicon. Now, what do you suggest would be the best course of action for me to take if I want to become fluent and expert in the Koine Greek?
Well, you know, what I did was I started with an interlinear, and I read that for about 6 or 8 months, and then I tossed it aside, and I had a copy of the NA-27, to just plain Greek text. And you know, I'm pretty fortunate because I have a good memory and I could remember most of the Bible stories as I read them. So I know the story, so I could fit the words into the story. You know what I mean? I could, knowing the story, knowing what was said, I could look at the words and imagine which word was which, word in the story. And that helped me to some extent. But it's just, once you learn the case endings and the nouns and you might need a lexicon for 50% of the words when you start out. But if you keep reading, you know, just devote an hour a day to just a Greek text and a lexicon. And once you learn the parts of speech and how to determine them, it'll come to you in time. I mean, it might take a year, but just don't give up. Just persevere.
Yeah. Now, what Greek New Testament do you think is the best one to use?
I only use the NA-27.
Okay.
That's because it shows all the...
This Greek New Testament edited by Kurt Allen, Matthew Black, Martini, Metzger, and Wickren.
Yeah, that's the Nestle Aelin Novum Testamentum Graecae.
Okay. What do you think of that one?
Well, that's the one I use. The UBS-4 is all... I mean, it's a Greek text, right? And it's based on the NA-27 text, but it shows less of the variations. And I like to, you know, for translational purposes, I like to see all the variations in all the manuscripts. And that's what the NA-27 basically does for me. It's a clerical work. And I don't follow it all the time. You know, sometimes I follow there's mistakes the NA27 makes where they'll use later manuscripts because they happen to like the reading better. I try to stick with the Codex Vaticanus and the Codex Sinaiticus and the oldest papyri are basically what I prefer.
Thank you.
And sometimes it's hard to pick one over the other. It really is. And I leaned towards the Vaticanus, actually, when I was translating Luke and Paul. And when I started translating Matthew, I favored the Sinaiticus more. If I have the time, I'll do it. I have copious notes for my Paul translation and for my Luke translation, but I don't have my notes typed into a computer yet for my John, Matthew, and Mark translations. And the Catholic epistles. I have the notes, but they're not typed yet. And they have to be redacted. I ran out of time in prison. It sounds crazy saying that, but I did.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand. You were in prison for quite some time then?
12 years.
12 years. Wow.
I would, you know, the time just flew. My time flew. I was reading and writing all the time, and it flew.
And that's where you studied Greek?
That's where I did everything.
Oh, I see.
All my historical writing is from my reading in prison. All my Greek translation is from my study in prison.
You know, me and my brothers have often said that being a prisoner at some point in one's life is almost a prerequisite to historical greatness. We see Jesus Christ as a prisoner for a time before his sacrifice. We see Adolf Hitler in prison while he writes the first volume of Mein Kampf. We see, you know, Louis Beam in prison before he's acquitted on sedition charges. A lot of people in the movement take the stance, well, you know, prison is no place for a white man. But I disagree. I couldn't disagree with that more. What do you think about that?
Well, it was like my monastery on one side. I mean, I was already a racist probably by the time I was about six, and I'm not exaggerating. I already had the racial thing right at a very early age, but I was actually in law enforcement and got in trouble, and that's why I went to prison. And prison pulled me out of the world and gave me the ability to actually take a look at what was going on, and it's what you make of it. You know, every challenge in your life is what you make of it. And you could make good of it or you can make bad of it. I mean, I could have sat around like a fat slob and ate potato chips and played pinochle for 12 years. A lot of guys do that.
Were you in federal prison?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I was at Elkton for 11 years.
Oh, I see. Yeah. You know, I have never done federal prison time, but I did time in state prison here in California. And I toured our segregation units and the max supermax penitentiaries and the SHU, the segregated housing units there, nearly the entire 5 years that I was there.
Yeah,
so
you probably had
a
little rougher. You probably had it a little rougher than I had it.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of hard to study because when you're in the SHU, you know, they say 23-1 lockdown, but it's really 69-3. You don't. Sometimes you don't get out of your cell for 3 days at a time, and you're stuck in there. If you don't have any in-cell predatory behavior, then you have a cellmate. Of course, it's all by race there. And I was fortunate enough to have a kinsman come into my cell, and I told him the gospel, and he accepted it and became a fanatical identity Christian on fire for Christ.
That's great. That you know.
But the point, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. My point is that we didn't have much material to study. What we did have was devoured and nearly memorized.
Right. Sometimes not having much material gives you more focus. You know, when I started reading history, I didn't have any books, and I had to rely on my family to send me books. And I had to be very careful and choosy about which books I wanted.
Sure, because if you got a stupid one, then you couldn't ask your family for another month or two for another one.
Well, right. So I honestly, I studied for 6 months what books I wanted to read, and made a list, and I wanted to read Herodotus, and I wanted to read Diodorus and Strabo and Josephus, and I read a lot of others besides those, but that core that I still use in my papers to this day, that's what I started with. And I got me a Thayer's Lexicon and moved right up to a Liddell and Scott. And first I had the Liddell and Scott, the abridged one, based on the 7th edition, and knew that that wasn't good enough, so I got the big 9th edition Liddell and Scott. And I was very fortunate because I was in a place – first, I was in a situation where most of the staff knew what I was before time – and left me alone. You know, they didn't really screw with me too bad. And because of that, I was able to get away with a lot of things that I wouldn't have been able to get away with. Well, when we were allowed 5 books, I had 50. Sometimes I had 100. And I rented space in other prisoners' lockers to put my books. You know, and I could have never got away with that in a lot of state prisons or even in a lot of federal prisons. If the staff didn't more or less know what I was there for and respect that and leave me alone.
Your curriculum was being guided.
So,
okay, well, Bill, thank you for having me on and answering my question. I do have to go. I will try to call back again before the program's over. How long does the call last for?
Well, this call lasts until everybody's worn out and nobody calls in anymore. I mean, this call, it's gone till 3, right? Sometimes it's 2 hours, sometimes it's 5. It depends. I dial in and go with the flow. That's what this call is all about.
Excellent. Well, thank you once again, and God be with you.
God be with you. Thank you. Okay, anybody else? Somebody's got a call. We can't rely on Pilgrim all night here. And Bruce.
Thank you.
You know, I know.
He sounded like a well-read, intelligent guy. I would have liked to talk to him for hours.
Yeah.
That's okay. We'll talk again. I only saw him for the first time the other day, in the forum.
Name's Obi, right?
Yeah, Obadiah 83.
You know, I notice a lot of us folks, when I say us folks, I mean Israelites, I notice a lot of us want to clamp down and kind of wrap Yahweh in a box, you know? I mean, I'm not speaking personally on any level, but I mean us Israelites who are sincerely groping after, you know, being still and knowing that Yahweh is Yahshua and He's the Tree of Life, and we have nothing in ourselves but Him to show us. But there's a part of us, it seems, from what I have seen and felt, is that there's part of us that wants to come to a conclusion, you know, in the sense of, you know, wrapping Him in a neat little package as though He's, you know, based upon just simply our own experience, if you know what I mean.
No matter how smart we think we are or how intelligent we think we are or how worldly and well-read we think we are, we can't ever imagine ourselves to be able to think at Yahweh's level. Right?
Yeah,
he says over and over again, my purpose is not your purpose and my ways are not your ways, right?
Yeah, and there's a reason He hides Himself from us. Even those who He loves, He hides us in Him in the sense that there's no way that our condition, the conditioned part of us that's a result of our you know, the rotten society, this Babylonian society, this universalism, and this, how can I say? Well, what I guess it's what Paul said, there's a law in me that works contrary to the law of the Spirit of life in Christ. What's your take on that, Bill?
Well, I like to think that when Paul talks about the things that make him sin and the law in him that works contrary to the law of the Spirit, he's talking about the hormones of our bodies. We don't understand these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but these brain chemicals and these hormones, they are the very things that we need to be able to function normally. I mean, if you don't have these hormones that cause you to lust, then you don't seek a mate and you don't reproduce. Do you see what I mean?
So the things that
we need to function in life also cause us to sin when we let them get out of hand.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And I think that's what Paul's referring to.
Yeah.
Do you think that possibly part of it is, too, that if this is sort of a schooling process, that as children of Yahweh in heaven with Yahweh, you would not really encounter evil much?
Well, I believe it's absolutely a schooling process, because at some point in the distant past, there was a rebellion against God.
So you'd have to be, you know, in order for you to attend school, you have to be put into a milieu where you are going to have to make choices, where you're going to see evil in action, where you're going to have the opportunity to
Galatians chapter 4, the law is our schoolmaster, right?
Yeah, to choose it or reject it and react to it. So, and of course, there is the practical aspect of, for example, lust, as you put it, and because that's how at a given age, that's why younger people have more rampaging hormones generally than older people.
Well,
you know, so they'll reproduce.
Rampaging hormones. No, that's absolutely true. If we didn't have those hormones that cause us to lust, we wouldn't reproduce.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the very functions that we need to carry on our lives that if we let them get out of hand, they'll cause us trouble.
Yeah, so there's your opportunity to choose.
Yes, absolutely. And
learn what happens when you choose unwisely.
And Yahweh's better children will seek to love his law. Even if we can't fulfill it, we have to seek to love it and institute it. And even in this Christian age where we're not judged by it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the real promise in Christ, that we're all guilty, so we're not going to be judged by the law. That's the promise of Christ.
But we still learn a lot, either through our own failures and what we suffer as a consequence, or through looking around and seeing the havoc it creates when people do go against the law and choose incorrectly. Like I said, if you were at home in heaven with Yahweh, you wouldn't have that opportunity. You wouldn't have all of that.
Well, that's why I try to put it in the phraseology I try to use is that there was a rebellion against Yahweh, and now all of his children have to experience what life is in rebellion
right.
from Yahweh. So that we all know good from evil, right?
Yep.
That's what the man knew, right?
Yep.
He experienced good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as he partook of the fruit, he experienced evil, right?
Right.
So now we all have to experience evil.
So that's why we're here in this mucky mess.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why that, you know, it has to be it negates the laws of economics in the universe if all of this is for naught. And if all of this is for naught, then the universe wouldn't be very economical.
Obviously it's not. Only a fool says in his heart there is no God. Take a look around you.
Well, right. That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm trying to phrase in secular terms, to defeat their own logic. The fact that this is a lesson necessitates the fact that our spirits live and our consciences live on after we die. Otherwise, mm-hmm. there's no point in the lesson.
Mm-hmm. Once you get that college degree, you got to do something with it.
Well, right, exactly. If you want to call it a college degree.
Yeah, right. Sort of an analogy, you know.
I have a thing against college.
I agree.
It's only my own vainglory because I never got to go.
As you can see from the University of Alabama shooting, of course you would have gone many years ago, but diverse experience you missed.
I realized in my 20s that most of the guys I knew went to college, that they went to participate in drunken orgies and just to get over and goof off for 4 more years.
Yeah.
Just have 4 more years of high school. That's why they went to college.
Yeah.
And I got my fill of that, most of that stuff in high school. So I was kind of happy I didn't go to college.
No toga parties for you.
Nope, never. No, I was loading trucks at 17.
I think, wasn't that Huey Long that was shot by that Jew doctor in Alabama? Was that Alabama? I think it was Birmingham, back in the 30s. I think he was going to be a candidate for the president.
Right. He was, they were actually afraid of him, the establishment. They killed him. The Jews killed him, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, a little Jew doctor murdered him.
Every time they want to get rid of somebody, they come up with some lone nut. It's never really a lone nut. Crypto Jew. Must be Russell Walker. Oh, Crypto Jew, Gru, you're not going to type anymore here. I'm sorry.
Crypto Clown.
Well, there's someone on the forum named Crypto Jew, huh?
I'll unmute him if he promises to be a good boy and stop cussing in the forum. Ooh. Okay, come on. So why don't somebody call in here so we could have a program, huh? I don't know. Dr. Weiss, Gerald says this. Gerald, why don't you call in and talk about Huey Long? I don't know much about it. I know they call him the Kingfisher. Why did they call him the Kingfisher? That must be a Southern, maybe one of those New Orleans unbiblical food things.
I think he was pretty aware of what the Jews were doing, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, it's apparent. I mean, I don't really know. I read a Barnes Review article on Huey Long, but it was so long ago, I honestly don't remember much about it.
Yeah, I don't think it's in the public school curriculum about him.
There's not much in the public school curriculum.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, right?
It's about Gerald, they don't even teach kids how to read anymore.
Yeah. Well, the things they teach kids are all trite and absolutely frivolous.
Yeah. Teach them how to sue your parents.
The long road to communism.
And that Linux works like a charm. Thanks, Bill.
Oh, did you install that already, Linux Mint?
It works great.
Cool. Yeah, it does work great.
I'm afraid to launch into it.
Why?
Was it easy? Was it easy to put on?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. not hard to install. There are some things that are difficult that you need technical expertise to do. But anything that you're going to need, you shouldn't need any of that technical expertise. I mean, it should all be there for you.
I get the idiot boxes that walk me through them. Walk me through it, right?
Yeah, yeah, it'll walk you through the installation.
Okay.
If you want to sit on the phone with me and we'll install it together. I mean, I'll do that maybe when I get back from Virginia next week.
If I have a chance, I'll give it a try. If I get snagged, I'll let you know.
Gerald, I'm trying to unmute you. My screen's not cooperating tonight. All right. Gerald, I'll be right back. This is terrible. Try to bring this up again.
I sent a note to TalkShoe, and I told them I love TalkShoe, and the free service is great, and I would love to click on all these ads, but unfortunately the chat room is so unstable, I'm afraid to. Maybe they could address that issue.
Well, you know something? It's not unstable at all with Linux.
Yeah.
My Firefox is on the blank. I'm going to have to quit the whole thing. Not responding. Wonderful. I should slide over to the Linux machine and go on the forum on that.
Now what do I do?
Oh, Gerald.
Hello.
Hello. I was trying to unmute you. I guess it finally...
I was afraid I was going to be muted for life.
Well, I'm having a hard time with my browser, and you know how talks
are. I understand. Now, Huey P. Long was an interesting individual. Of course, he lived during a time where you had the rise of fascism throughout the world. You had Franco in Spain, and you had Uncle Adolf in Germany, and you had Mussolini in Italy, and you had a lot of, for a better word, we'll just say right-wing movements here in the United States. Of course, you had Father Coughlin, you had Charles Lindbergh, and you had Huey P. Long, because Huey P. Long was a unique individual. He had the charisma ability that Hitler and Mussolini somewhat had. He could just wow a crowd. And he wrote a book, Every Man a King, and it's possible that Kingfisher name may have been derived from that book, but he was kind of a socialist type speaker. He wanted to he talked to the downtrodden and the poor people, and he told them what they wanted to hear, and they lauded him tremendously. And, of course, had he not been killed, he probably would have beat Roosevelt in the election. He was going all over the country, much like George Wallace was doing. And, of course, back in those days, they liked to travel by train, and they would stand on the back of the caboose, and they would speak to the throngs of people that would show up. And Huey P. Long... had more people coming out to hear him than Franklin Delano Roosevelt had. And he was gaining tremendous support because of his charisma and the message that he was giving. And I think that Dr. Weiss from Shreveport killed him. Of course, there's been some debate about that because some was trying to say that his bodyguard had been in on it and it was part of a conspiracy. But Gerald L. K. Smith was personal friends of Huey P. Long and supported him tremendously. And as a matter of fact, when Huey P. Long's funeral, Gerald L. K. Smith was asked to deliver the eulogy. And from what I understand, and well, I've read it, he gave a tremendous one. And they refused to print it. They wouldn't publish it in any way in reference to the funeral because of what Gerald L. K. Smith had to say. But Huey P. Long was quite a guy. Of course, Louisiana was known for its longs. We had Russell Long, which was a sorry Democratic senator, and we had Huey P. Long. I mean, we had Earl Long, which was kind of nuts. But Huey was the one who really had the smarts. He acted a lot like he was a little on the unintelligent side, but that man knew what he was doing. And he was going after the vote of the people. And like I say, he would have been president, I feel reasonably certain. And, of course, we know what the establishment does to anyone who becomes a threat to their power. They kill them.
Absolutely.
And they always come up with somebody to do it. And they come up with some cockaninny reason that he acted alone, or he was despondent, or, you know, the moon was in the wrong quadrant or something.
People buy it all the time, every time. People
right.
Say, oh, okay.
Well, there's
oh,
a
okay.
list, and, you know, that would be a good program sometime for somebody to just do a list of all of the people in American history who have been assassinated. And then, you know, you can draw parallels between them. But it's fascinating the number of people that have been killed. And, of course, most of them were on our side, and they were fighting for the right principles in this country. And even Kennedy, Jack Kennedy, I think, was coming around to some extent. If you heard one of his last speeches that he wrote, he talked about the secret society, and he was talking about Freemasonry and how it controlled the world, and it was one of the greatest threats. And
That speech is on the front page of Coustagenia.
Yes. But no, you got a lot of good things on your site. But anyway, you know, I kind of liked Huey P. Long. He used his hands. If you'd have cut his hands off, he wouldn't have been able to talk. But, of course, Hitler did,
so
and Mussolini did also.
He was Huey P. Longini or something?
I don't know. But anyway, if a person wants to do a little research and study on him, he wrote, like I say, he wrote a couple of books, and there's a lot of film clips, and I'm sure there's probably, I haven't looked it up, but I'm sure there's a lot of clips on YouTube of Huey P. Long, and it's interesting to listen to him and hear what he had to say. Of course, he was at that era, and if the United States had elected someone like Huey P. Long or even Charles Lindbergh, Charles Lindbergh was being groomed by a lot of people to run for president. And, of course, when he gave his famous Des Moines, Iowa speech, which he talked about the Federal Reserve and the Jewish bankers and all, that's when, of course, his baby was kidnapped and ultimately killed. And I guess you might say he was neutralized, which is a popular CIA action that they have been known or it's said that they use. They neutralize people. And but anyway, Charles Lindbergh, chances are, he could have run for president and won because he was a national hero. Well, he was a world hero. And the reason they didn't kill him, I think, and a lot of other people think, is because he was just too popular. And they didn't want to risk killing him, so they did, I guess, the next best thing and intimidated him by kidnapping his baby and ultimately killing him. And we've had, you know, Charles Coughlin. I know he was a Catholic, but he really did preach the good message. He exposed the Jews. He exposed the Jewish control of Bolshevism and the danger that Bolshevism posed for the rest of the world. And he had the church that he operated out of. He put out the social justice newspaper, which was his organ. He wrote
justice.
By, and he was having a pretty good phenomenal success himself. He was having larger and larger crowds turning out to hear him, and there was a movement afoot to get him to run for president. And I think he really wanted to.
Let me just interject something. Let me say that social justice was actually a term that Hitler also used in Mein Kampf. And that in the 1930s, socialism did not have the connotation, I believe, that it had today, that there were differing definitions of the word then. There were differing definitions of the word then, and the liberals adopted it. The Marxists adopted the word as a disguise for their own agenda. That's what I think happened.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But Hitler, you know, National Socialist, Hitler was not a socialist as we understand socialist by any means. I mean, his writing in Mein Kampf definitely shows the principles that he who doesn't work doesn't eat. I'm going to dig that out right now. Go on. I just wanted to get that in there. That's all. I'm sorry.
Well, see, being almost 70 years old, I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
Ah, well.
What was Huey P. Long seems to be like a socialist like Hitler was. And
well, so a lot of the programs that he was pushing were of a socialist agenda. And you might say that he was promoting a socialist agenda, but then look at what Franklin Delano Roosevelt was doing. And, of course, we had the New Deal, and we was coming out of the Depression, and people were hurting. They were really hurting. And we had the Dust Bowl going on. There was a lot of bad things that was going on that was causing people to hurt. They had lost their jobs. So the message was right. And whether or not Huey P. Long was jumping on the bandwagon and promoting that ideology or not in order to get elected, I don't know. But he was pulling strength away from Roosevelt. And, of course, Roosevelt was sick and supposed to be dying. He was supposed to have that cancer over his eye and all that stuff. I just thought I'd call in and just say a little bit about Huey Long.
Yeah, we appreciate it because I can't say anything. I can't say
well,
anything.
Huey P. Long was always highly thought of in Louisiana. And as a matter of fact, Russell Long and Earl Long both, I think, rode the coattails of Huey P. Long in the office because the Long name was just admired tremendously. Because Louisiana was a poor state. Mississippi and a lot of some of the southern states, the Gulf states, were considered poor states. And, of course, we blame it on all you Yankees for burning us out during the war. But anyway, it was...
What happened is in the 60s, when I was a kid, the Jews moved all the refineries out of New Jersey and down to Louisiana and Mississippi.
And Texas. Of course, we lost everything to Texas pretty near. Right after that, you had big corporations like Texas Eastern and various ones that pulled out of Shreveport. And, of course, you had refineries and everything out of Baton Rouge. And I think they still have a lot of the refineries, but nothing like they used to. And, of course, now we're sitting on some major gas reserves and that they found in oil reserves and the oil field is coming back into Louisiana. There's just tremendous drilling going on everywhere. And if a fella has any kind of a work history in oil-related, gas-related field, they could probably come to Louisiana and get a job instantly because it's a boom right now.
Interesting. And Don Brown sent me some pictures about the snow down there. You call
well,
that snow? That ain't snow.
Well, that wasn't really the pictures of the snow we had. Like here at my house, I had a little over 6 inches of snow, and everything was colored. It was just a solid white. But you got to understand, the picture he took, that was I think that was around Ruston, and they didn't have the snow at probably the time that he had taken them, and then a lot of traffic was going in and out of that oil field, And they just didn't have the snow there. But we did have snow in North Louisiana. Had a pretty good bit.
Doesn't it all look better when it's solid white?
Well, yeah. Well, sure. I mean, you know, there are people who look good when they put on paint and powder. But
I've only had 2 inches of snow here in the last month, I swear. I wouldn't even shovel it. My mother got mad at me for not even wanting to shovel it. Because it was like nothing. It was like kicking out of the way.
We were fortunate because it was one of those pretty fluffy snows. We didn't have the ice and sleet. We just had the snow. And it just stuck to everything. And it was just, of course, it didn't last long. But it was absolutely beautiful. Jocko got up early with me. And we went into the library. And he jumped up on the conference table like he always does. And he almost did a double back flip. He looked outside, and it was just nothing but white, and he couldn't figure out what in the world happened. And so it took him a while to kind of get used to it, but it was fine. I couldn't go out and make a snowman or throw snowballs like I would have liked to have done, but I still enjoyed it. What else you want to know?
Best way to enjoy snow, Gerald, is from the inside.
Well, yeah, I'm more or less, I don't have much of a choice. And then it was cold.
Yes, and wet.
You know, I used to go out in 28-degree weather with nothing but a T-shirt on, and I'd go to work with a slip-over work shirt like that on with no sleeves, and everybody thought I was nuts. But I can't do that now. Something happened. I think I got older.
Oh, yeah, but 6 inches of snow. What are your – you don't get snow down there normally, do you? What are your normal winter temperatures?
No, we don't get much snow. We get the ice storms a lot, and, of course, they break everything, you know, knock the electricity off and all that sort of thing. And I really hate the ice stuff. They're beautiful, but it's devastating for people like me, especially people that are shut in like me. If I lose electricity, I'm just dead in the water just about. You know, I'll lose everything in my refrigerator and everything else. So it's very difficult for me when the electricity goes off. But this was a gorgeous, happy event, and it lasted long. And unfortunately, I was not able to take pictures. I wish I had been able to take pictures, but I didn't. Anyway, you're having a good show so far. I wish more people would call in. I know we got some good people out there that James hadn't called in.
Well, James has a phone problem.
That's right.
And right now Les is on the line, and we haven't heard from Les in a while. How you doing, Les?
Hey, good.
Here. Not bad.
Thank you, Gerald. I appreciate it. I want to read a quick, because it relates to the conversation with Gerald, I want to read this real quick from Adolf Hitler from Mein Kampf. It's just two short places. I'll keep it short. And from Mein Kampf, page 24. Well, we needed that. From Mein Kampf, page 24. The man who has never been in the clutches of that crushing viper can never know what its poison is. He's talking about socialism. I'll start at the top of the paragraph. There was hardly any other German city in which the social problem could be better studied than in Vienna. Here I must utter a warning against the illusion that this problem can be studied from above down. The man who has never been in the clutches of that crushing viper can never know what its poison is. An attempt to study it in any way or in any other way will only result in superficial talk and an attempt and sentimental delusions. Both are harmful. The first because it can never go to the root of the question. The second because it evades the question entirely. I do not know which is the more nefarious, to ignore social distress, as do the majority of those who have been favored by fortune and those who have risen in the social scale through their own routine labor, or the equally supercilious and often tactless but always genteel condescension displayed by people who make a fad of being charitable and who plume themselves on sympathizing with the people. Of course, such persons sin more than they can imagine from lack of instinctive understanding, and thus they are astonished to find that the social conscience on which they pride themselves never produces any results. He's talking about welfare, but often causes their good intentions to be resented, and then they talk of the ingratitude of the people that receive the welfare. Now, from page 27, during my struggle for existence in Vienna, I perceived very clearly that the aim of all social activity must never be merely charitable relief, which is ridiculous and useless, but it must rather be a means to find a way of eliminating the fundamental deficiencies in our economic and cultural life, deficiencies which necessarily bring about the degradation of the individual, or at least lead him towards such degradation. The difficulty of employing every means, even the most drastic, to eradicate the hostility prevailing among the working classes towards the state is largely due to an attitude of uncertainty in deciding upon the inner motives and the causes of this contemporary phenomenon. Hitler was anti-welfare. He was in favor of giving people opportunity. That was his socialism. He was in favor of giving people the opportunity to make their way in life, which the bankers don't care about. And that's basically what he's saying.
May I say something?
Yeah, sure.
I recently got a couple of DVDs out of Greece. And believe it or not, they sold over eBay. eBay knocks out anything that tells the truth, especially if it concerns the Jews. But somehow or another, these slipped through. And these DVDs are nothing more than news clips of Hitler's rise to power and all of the pomp and ceremony that went on in Germany during the 30s, all of the parades. And the thing that astonished me the most was the throngs of people. They were sometimes 20 feet deep, lined all the streets and everywhere, and they were just German citizens, and they were waving flags and they were throwing flowers, they were laughing and smiling, and it was a happy, joyous occasion. And when I think back to Russia and the Bolsheviks and all of the Oriental countries, especially China particularly, how they forced those people out into the streets to support, and they still do in some of those countries over there, to support whatever regime's in power. And they force those people to do that, and you don't see the enthusiasm, the brightness, and the happiness on the faces like you saw on those German people. I think that was the thing that stood out the most. Those people were happy. They supported Hitler. They supported his policies. And they supported the National Socialist Program. It was not forced upon them by a bayonet.
Right. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And that's an excellent observation. And that's why I have that image library up on the Mein Kampf site. And I've been blessed with somebody now who's helping me to manage it, because I just can't do everything, and he's done an excellent job. But that's what, you know, I want to display to people what we destroyed. Because we destroyed Christian Germany. We meaning the American and British empires. We destroyed Christian Germany. The Jews led brother against brother, and we reveled in destroying our brother.
You know, one of the points... I think people should, if they could, they'd have to get the right editions. But George Patton, in his memoirs and papers and letters that was put out after his death, there's several sets, but there's one set in particular, and I had to get mine out of England, that has more of his papers and the better ones. They need to read what Patton said about what was going on in post-war Germany and the Henry Morgenthau plan and what we were doing to the German people. And he talked about the Jews that were coming back in to Germany and he said they were the scourge. They were the dirty, filthy people, and that the Henry Morgenthau plan through the Allies military control were putting these people in control of virtually every facet of life and business in Germany. And that's why he got so angry, and he said that he was going to come back to the United States. He was going to run for president. He knew he couldn't win. He figured MacArthur was going to run for president and get elected. But he said he wanted a platform in which he could tell the American people what we was doing to Germany. And he said he had come to the conclusion that America fought on the wrong side of that war. And,
right,
of course,
absolutely.
He had his accident and was probably neutralized, and he was killed.
They absolutely killed him. There's no doubt, no doubt in my mind.
He was really a great patriot, and he's not getting the credit that he deserves.
And the man that sat in the White House through the 50s, he's the man that did the deeds of the Jews and got the reward from the Jews. And he's a Jew himself, but there's no doubt. But that's, you know, it's the man sitting in that White House. That's a reward for being a sellout and a whore. For those Jew bankers, there's no doubt.
You're talking about Harry Truman?
I'm talking about Dwight Eisenhower.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't remember
all the
presidents there.
In the context of, you know, European generals, American generals in the European theater.
I do remember reading that Dwight seemed very gleefully happy when he heard how many Germans were being killed and were starving to death in the camps and stuff after the war.
This would have been a very different country in the 60s if Patton was the president in the 50s.
Yeah, I barely know that much about Patton from, you know, a couple of history books and, of course, the movie with George G. Scott.
And, of course, none of them said anything like Gerald just said.
Well, the movie was pretty impressive, you know, in a few aspects where he kept wanting to go all the way to the Russian front and wipe out Moscow.
Kill
communism, and he was thwarted all the way.
But the movie still made him look like the slightly rambunctious warrior type that, yeah, you know, they ignored anything about his real politics, or they had to. They glossed it over and they filled it in with lies.
You know, the best part of that movie was when Patton slapped that little Jew boy's face.
I really hated it afterwards when he was dressed down afterwards and he was told to apologize to that kid in front of everybody. I'm like, how can they do that?
Yeah, that's probably why the Jews really put that in the movie.
That blew my mind. It's like, yeah. But then again, you know, things like that have happened, you know, even more recent times. Like, there's a story that barely got out. It made the newspapers in one day, but no one got the whole story. When I think it was Mulroney, Prime Minister Mulroney, went to Jamaica. The Jamaican army, or you know, or police, whoever was in charge at the airport, you know, told everybody not to leave the plane. But Mulroney's head of security or some, you know, head honcho, he struts off the plane. Who do you think you people are to tell us what to do? Well, he got slapped down to the ground and rifles were pointed at everybody. So they had a good reason to stop anybody from getting off. And the rumor was that there were drugs on the plane. They were smuggling drugs and money back and forth from Canada and Jamaica. You know, they thought they would never get caught, but it was all glossed over and hushed up. So, you know, no matter who you are, I guess you will get caught.
Absolutely.
I'm relying on information that somebody who's tight with a Freemason gave to me back in the early 90s. So, you know, it might not be true, but just the way, you know, they barely report on what happened. Like they did report their, you know, that there, you know, there was a violent arrest, you know, with the prime minister's people. It's like, well, how can that happen? You know, you can't. Would you imagine the president of the U.S. and, you know, and his staff getting thrown to the ground and rifles pointed at them in any country? Not really.
I see Peter Liu wants to know if Hitler was a Jew.
No, Hitler was a Jew. Not a Jew. The Jews want you to believe Hitler was a Jew. Anybody who thinks Hitler was a Jew is absolutely mad and or following the Jews. Stop following the damn Jews. That's Jewish propaganda. They try to make Christ a Jew too, right?
A lot of these clowns that say Hitler was a Jew, they'll call you comrade right after that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of propaganda over the years. You know, in high school books, history books, on TV, even in alternative media underground, where they claim that Hitler was into Satanism and the occult, and he was tied in with Freemasonry, and you name it. You know, it's like they'll pull everything out of the book that they can label him with to say he was evil.
They don't want us to believe that Hitler was a good Christian man leading a good Christian nation that took the wolves, threw them the hell out of the treasury, and for that reason, the Jews of England and Wall Street conspired and got the Germanic peoples of England and America to destroy Christian Germany. That's the bottom line. Anybody that really studies the damn period would know that. It just infuriates me when people that are supposed to be Christians go following the Jews.
Well, yeah, you'd be surprised, younger guys who are in their 20s and 30s who've been through the U.S. Army, you start arguing about World War II with them, and they, you know, they say, what, you're saying the Germans were good guys? I'm like, well, yeah, you people, when I start saying you, I'm like, you Americans, you let the commies take over all of Europe and rape half the women and kill us all off. You know, of course Germany were the good guys. They were trying to, you know, help us all out, and you stopped them. And they're like, you're crazy. I'm like, yeah, well, you're an asshole.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people, especially from that World War II generation, they don't want to understand that they swallowed all that propaganda.
Well, they handed it all down to their kids and grandkids. It's like that lies continued.
Absolutely.
The bigger the lie, you know, the easier to believe, I guess.
I have a 91-year-old grandmother upstairs, and she's still a spark plug. And I have discussions with her all the time, and she's just, well, William, that's the way we were taught. And I'm like, well, Grandma, I'm sorry, but it's wrong. It's just wrong.
We know if you go to eBay right now and you pull up, you can pull up Nazism, you can pull up Nazi, you can pull up the Third Reich, and of course you can pull up Adolf Hitler, but you will find literally thousands of books written on Germany and Hitler and National Socialism, and they are all anti-Hitler, anti-German people, and some of them tell the awfulest atrocities you can imagine. But I defy you to find more than 10 books that are pro-Hitler or pro-Germany or tell the truth. They're just not allowed on the site.
Right.
Well, you probably couldn't buy White Power by Rockwell, I guess, on there.
That's the power of the Jewish propaganda machine. It's incredible. And people that claim to be Christians and claim to know better, and they still swallow it. It's incredible. It's amazing. Yahweh didn't send us He didn't send us one deception. He sent us a whole bunch of them.
The biggest lie, you know, why we're all here. It's like people think the Jews are God's chosen people. And when you try to prove it, you know, show them that it's wrong, they don't want to talk to you anymore. They refuse to believe it, don't want to look at the evidence. I'm going to change this up for a second. I've been reading about the fourth dimension lately, and you really don't talk about spirits or entities or anything like that usually, but it's like I've had enough experience to know those things are real.
Well, but, I mean, my writing reflects that I know those things are real. Didn't I write the sin in the first epistle of John, and who are the modern day Sadducees? And that it's the Sadducees who deny the spiritual world. And didn't I write the problem of Genesis?
I didn't read that. Sorry.
You got to go read my site, Wes.
Okay.
I mean,
well, you got a lot on there.
I talk about things that are pragmatic that I could show people in books, and you know, it's whatever topic comes along. But I'm sure I talked about the spiritual world plenty over the last 14 months with Eli. You know, in those programs.
Okay. This one book I've been reading lately, they start talking about all these different cultures and other races and everything, and this concept of reincarnation and everything. And a lot of remote places, they do these rituals to prevent people from being reborn, from spirits, you know, reentering people's wombs and stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, that doesn't relate to us. But, you know, what if that is true for these other races, that they've got these disembodied spirits that do linger on and do, they do carry on their family's history in their children and grandchildren and stuff. You know, I don't know if you've heard of race memory before. Like Rudolf Steiner, I think, German occultist, he talked about that a bit.
Yeah, I understand the concept, but I don't like pointing to things that I don't have biblical passages or examples, clear examples in history.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about, if you've read any non-canonized work that touches upon any of that stuff.
Well, Enoch, I mean, one Enoch is, you know, basically what a lot of us would point to as a good discussion of the spiritual world. In fact, one Enoch says that all the evil spirits come from bastards. And that's one, you know, one thing I could illustrate in that area. So that would be, I would suggest you go to artisanpublishers.com, get yourself a copy of one Enoch.
Okay. Yeah, I had that. I gave it away. I'm going to have to get it again.
The Charles translation.
Yeah.
Not the Lawrence translation. The Lawrence the Charles translation is scholarly. The Lawrence translation is, he's got some really dumb notes in there. Just a few, but they're really bad.
Okay, now I can't remember actually which one I had. It might have been the Lawrence. But okay.
Well, if it was a slim white book, it was the Lawrence translation.
Yeah, it was very slim.
Yeah, and you want the Charles translation, and it's very scholarly, and there's tons of notes in it. You don't need to read all the notes. I mean, you could, but it would take you a long time. It's a pretty thick book with pretty small print. But Charles's translation, I think, is a lot more scholarly.
So things have calmed down. Troublemaker's not been calling in lately.
Well, Troublemaker never calls in on my Monday night show. He's never come on this program. The one open forum that I do now, he has to visit my website. He has to see the program announcements. And the one open forum program I do, and the Troublemaker's never, ever been here.
Hmm. So he just calls in to disrupt the Friday night shows, I guess?
Well, yeah. He goes on a forum and disrupts Friday, and he'll call in. He called in once on a Tuesday on the Crystal Leos program.
Okay, yeah. That, I was just listening to that.
And I engaged him on
the entire one that was recorded that he didn't know was being recorded, I guess.
Right.
I had a good laugh of, I think Gerald told him to go to hell finally at the end.
Yeah, Gerald did the right thing there. And you know, that program, I still got to put it together, but I have his,
Yeah, the emails and letters and everything that he denies and then says it's not relevant.
Well, I have an email of his from the next morning that he was putting words in my mouth that were the exact opposite that I told him in that forum. You know, he's a liar. The man is a liar. He's a trained liar.
Yeah, so if he's so double-minded like that, he's either got to be Jewish or a Freemason.
Well, yeah,
because they don't even know what the truth is. They tell the opposite, not even knowing they can pass lie detector tests.
Well, Pastor Ken Lent knows Troublemaker a lot longer than I do, and he believes that Troublemaker is a purposeful subverter, paid or not. He's a purposeful subverter. And he likes to latch onto you, and he's very adept at keeping you sucked into a conversation that's absolutely futile, just to waste your time. That's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And his arguments and his reasoning are entirely circular, and you'll just go around and around and around, and you'll prove him wrong at every degree, but he keeps going around and around. Yeah, he's really a... I've told guys 100 times, if he was in prison with me and had that attitude, I would have just knocked him out. I wouldn't argue with him. I'd just knock him out. And maybe then he'd learn, but I doubt it.
No, yeah, it's just surprising. It's like usually when people are, told or they get the feeling they're not wanted, they won't come around.
Right.
Like,
well,
that's why I haven't visited for a long time. You know, I kind of ticked off some people, I guess, with my loose talk and probably being a little inebriated.
But
so,
he has to come around because he's a subverter. His purpose is to subvert. So he's going to keep coming around, wanted or not. He's going to keep aggravating people, wanted or not, and keep distracting people and wasting their time. That's what his purpose is.
Yeah. Well, it's better just to... Well, block them or something, or just, tell everybody beforehand to ignore them.
Well, right. Saturday I blocked them on the program because I wanted to talk about a topic that I knew that he would distract the entire forum, and what I had to say about it would never be heard. So I just blocked them.
I see Pastor Linstead started up his own show, too. Martin Lipstead. I caught a couple of them. They're all right. But I guess it deals mostly with just issues in his area or people he's known from the movement.
Right. I should have. He called me Sunday morning. I was still sleeping, and I couldn't get back to him. I'm too busy.
He did pretty fine. He talks the whole time, It's like I don't think he really looks at the board or anything, maybe.
Yeah, I hope he put maybe Pilgrim announced a program on the forum or something.
No, because I didn't know it was on. It was on yesterday, and I didn't know until it was an hour into it. So I have to hear the first.
Yeah, I've seen you log in, and you wrote "be right back," and it's like I don't think he noticed because he was talking the whole time before you got there and after, and I don't think he noticed you were there.
I think
pay attention to what a few questions I typed in. So
I think he's getting used to the whole format, and also being on the air and talking. He did pretty good last night, but he has to practice a little bit more because he wanders a lot. He needs something to rein him in a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the first time he was a guest on, I think, on Bill's show a month or 2 months ago, he was looking all the time at the forum and answering questions, but I think he already had his program written out, and so he just went with it, maybe with a script.
It's hard. It's hard to be talking on this phone and watching that chat room.
Yeah.
I get busted a lot not paying close enough attention to Eli watching the chat room. I mean, sometimes I could do it, and sometimes I can't.
Yeah, I guess that's why on radio talk shows they have somebody controlling the switchboard and like for Larry King or whoever, and they type up who it is and what their question is and stuff and to prompt.
Yeah, well, that's a science. Yeah, that's they got that down pretty good on commercial radio.
Yeah, I learned over the years how to bypass them and get on the air. You never tell them the truth what you're going to say, because if you do, they're not going to let you on. I know it seems like the wrong thing to do, but it's like if you're going to talk about the, you know, about true history or about the Jews or whatever, they'll never let you on the air. Because, you know, if they know, they won't answer your call, or they'll say, oh, we've run out of time, you know, you were caller 99 or something.
Well, we're never going to be, we're never going to have the kind of audiences that, that the Jews get on FM or AM radio, believe me. That's not going to happen.
Well, yeah, with the two seed line audience, yeah, it's going to be, yeah, well, it has to be small, because it's like, if it was the everyday norm, then like you were saying earlier, then, you know, what was the purpose of all these trials and tribulations that we're all going through?
Absolutely.
But, okay, anyway, I'm going to let you go, and we'll stay at the end of this.
Okay, Les.
Good talking to you all.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless.
Well, what else is going on? That good, huh?
Wow.
Come on, Gerald, make some noise.
Gerald, you are a font of information just from that library alone.
He does. Gerald could talk about a lot of things. He's shy on us. I wish he
Yeah,
could,
I've been shy all my life.
Well, I'm going to stop by and see you, you shy young fellow.
I get down to Louisiana, I'm going to wind him up. I'm going to make him a Mai Tai or something and wind him up and just stick the phone in front of him.
Well, it's difficult sometimes to think about what to talk about unless a particular subject comes up. You know, I do have a – of course, I'm working on my South program right now, trying to get some material and whatnot together. Because that's coming up Tuesday week, and I've got to be ready, or I'll get in trouble. I promised I wouldn't mention her name. But anyway, I don't know. There's just so much. I've got so many. I've got a lot of newspapers and things that are coming in that are 200 and 300 years old. That actually some of them talk about the Jew bills that the colonies had to pass in order to give the Jews that, well, they had to circumvent the Constitution because the Jews were not given authority to do things, to live in areas, to set up businesses and do their usury and all, and some of the states like Maryland and Massachusetts had to actually pass what they actually called Jew bills. And I don't remember. I think it was Maryland. It could have been Massachusetts that passed it. The legislature passed it, and then they were forced to rescind it. And later on, they passed it again. But what the Jews did, they would get some upstanding pillar of the community to go to bat for some pious Jewish family person, and they would point to them and saying, you know, we've just got to let them in and let them set up practice and do whatever because they're good people. And so, you know, the legislatures would relent with all the pressure that was brought about. And they would allow these Jews, they would pass these bills and allow these Jews to set up shop. And, of course, you know, once you do that, well, there goes your newspapers, there goes your publishing houses and everything else. And but that's what they had to do. And a lot of these newspapers I've got are discussing the pros and cons of the Jew bill, and it's amazing the language that was used back in those days. You'd think an anti-Semite had written the article. But it was common knowledge that the Jew presented a problem. And it's just fascinating to read some of that. And I want to read some of those columns sometime on a program just so and quote the source so that people can actually to hear what some of these news, early newspapers in the colonies were writing about. It's fascinating. I've even got a newspaper that was written in the early 1700s that is discussing some trials. They were blood libel trials on Jews that were reportedly killing Christian babies and small kids and was using their blood for various and sundry things. And there was actually trials going on during that period. And it talks about the trials and about them being found guilty. As a matter of fact, one particular trial had a Jewish judge, and the people kicked the Jewish judge out because he ruled that they couldn't proceed and found the Jews innocent, and the people demanded that they go back and retry the Jews, and they found them guilty.
I would love to get my grubby hands on that for my Christogenia Jewish.
I bet your grubby hands
fashion.
Would too.
Hey, Gerald, were you mentioning Jewish ritual suicide, Jewish ritual murder?
Well, but these were original articles of the time that were discussing trials that was going on. So, you know, it makes those. Arnold Lees, I know he wrote a book, and Bill has that book on his site now. But he wrote a book entitled that, and he goes into a lot of that detail. But what I enjoy, and the thing that I've worked on my library all these many, many, many years, is I like to go for the source material. I don't want to take what somebody else says happened or they say somebody else said. I want to go to the actual source. And a lot of my library contains actual sources of the material. And that's why a lot of these early newspapers are so so interesting. My regret is that I can't continue to build my library like I used to. I had to retire, and I just don't have the funds to continue. But I've had the unique ability to go out and find original copies of all the classics on exposing the Jews, going back to the turn of the 1900s. And I found the original copies of nearly all. I've got probably 90% of all of the books, original editions, that tell about the Jewish control, even the protocols. I've got the original 1920 edition, American edition of the protocols. And, you know, just wow. It's phenomenal what I've been able to find, and I've done it on a shoestring budget. I think Yahweh was behind it. I don't know what the purpose of the library is, unless it's to help Bill Fink.
It's a repository for coming age after this age of darkness closes.
Well, you know, I have a friend in England, and I'm not going to mention his name, but he's a famous rugby player in England. He's on one of the big teams. And he's also a friend of the English court. And his father, well, he goes back to the Britain's publishing company of the 1920s and 30s and 40s. And he had warehouses full of a lot of the books that they printed and never sold. And so consequently, I was able to get a lot of my documents from him, and we became quite good friends. And he told me, I asked him one day, I said, what do you think the purpose of these libraries are? And I know that there are some libraries similar to mine scattered around the United States and of course, in some other countries. And he said that he thought that perhaps they were going to be used whenever Yahshua comes or before he comes, when the Jews are put on trial for the atrocities that they've committed down through the ages and are doing now, that these libraries are going to be documentations that's going to nail them.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I used yep. to think possibly that's correct. You know, I can't think of any other reasons for them to exist. So if mine disappears tomorrow, you'll know why.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up resources like that. I wanted to ask you, have you ever heard of the Pinckney Diary?
Oh, yes. And you see, there is not a copy of that in existence. The only proof that that existed was a letter from a lady that was akin to George Washington. I think it was George Washington, wasn't it, that
well,
was quoted
know, Pinckney,
in the...
Pinckney actually referred to his diary in a letter to John Quincy Adams.
Yeah,
from,
yeah, that's the letter. But now that letter was in the hands of this, the original copy of that letter was in the hands of this lady, and she wrote a letter of authenticity explaining, you know, the letter that she had. But
sure.
The actual diary was destroyed, and there are no copies of that diary in existence. I wish there were, because that was
yeah.
a damning a piece of literary work.
Mm-hmm. But we know that that there are eyewitnesses.
That was actually
sworn affidavit.
Benjamin Franklin was the subject, I think, of the diary. And what he
yes.
had to say about the Jews.
Yes, I think it goes Pinckney and Ben Franklin and some other people were having a chit-chat around the table during intermission some program, and that's what Franklin was saying. He was saying something to the effect, oh, I have it here if you'll just be patient with me. There's a great, if I may read this, there's a great danger for the United States of America. That great danger is the Jew. Gentlemen, in whichever lands the Jews have settled, they have depressed the moral level and lowered the degree of commercial honesty. They've created a state within a state. And when they are opposed, they attempt to strangle the nation financially, as in the case of Portugal and Spain. And, you know, he goes on to say that if the Jews are not excluded from the United States by the Constitution, within less than 100 years, they will stream into the country in such numbers that they will rule and destroy us and change our form of government for which Americans have shed their blood and sacrificed life, property, and personal freedom. If the Jews are not excluded, within 200 years, our children will be working the fields to feed the Jews while they remain in the counting house gleefully rubbing their hands.
It's not even that good. The Mexicans are working the fields to feed the Jews, and we're just out of work.
Jew, Mexican, tomato, tomato.
Yeah, you're right.
There's no doubt in my mind that Benjamin Franklin wrote those words. And there are other documents out there that contain similar type statements by some of our earlier patriots. And, of course, all of that, those works have been destroyed, and you have to really research to find them. But there are some out there. That's one of the more famous ones. And, of course, the Jews say that it's all fictitious. I guess it's a forgery, kind of like the
Can I say something real quick on that topic? Because, yeah, you know, I have a little reading in that area. I read Carl Van Doren's Benjamin Franklin, and he excluded those words. I just want to throw that out there. That was 1938, I think.
Right.
He didn't have those words. I'm just mentioning that just to, you know, I'm not saying that Van Doren maybe didn't leave them out, but he didn't have them.
Well, I'm not sure he would have wanted to have quoted them.
Well, you know, Franklin did make some statements about the Jews being parasites that Van Doren did include.
Mm.
They were awfully light statements compared to that, though.
Yeah. Well, it's probably because he couldn't substantiate it because the diary was long since destroyed. I think the diary existed, and...
Yeah, Franklin had a diary, and Franklin had an autobiography that was unfinished.
Was there any reference to the Jews in that autobiography? Do you know?
Well, he did. He did. He spoke about one Jew in particular, but he branded him a parasite, and he made the illusion that they were all parasites.
Yeah. Oh, of course he did. Of course he did.
Now I have that, and I don't know which book I have. It's an earlier book. It was written in the early 1800s, but I have a book that has those quotes in it. I'll have to go try to find it. Not now, but I mean, probably tomorrow.
Now, I wanted to ask anybody who's on the line too. Since we're talking about books and resources, are you familiar with Alexander H. Stevens and his writings?
No.
No, the great bulk of my reading has been the Loeb Library from Harvard and the Greek and Roman classics. I haven't.
What did he write?
He wrote The War Between the States and A History of a Short American History, I think, like, something like that. I'm looking for my books right now, if you'll just be patient with me.
While you're looking for that, can I say something?
Okay, he was the vice president of the Confederate States of America.
Oh, are you talking about the fellow from Louisiana?
Yes.
The Lost Cause.
No, he was from Georgia.
A Louisianian that was, I thought, was vice president of the Confederacy that wrote The Lost Cause. He was, he actually came back and was governor of the state.
Let's see, Alexander Hamilton Stevens. I don't know. Wikipedia says he was from Georgia.
Okay.
Poor guy was cursed at birth with that name.
Yeah.
But a righteous man nonetheless. And, you know, he talks about, I think somewhere in these two books, I inherit my friend's library every time he goes to prison for a hate crime. So I have his books here.
Wonderful.
I think that in this War Between the States by Alexander Stevens, he says that the Confederacy was the first nation on earth built upon the principles of biblicism and white supremacy.
Wow.
So, something of that nature. I'd have to find it in there, but I'd like to direct you to that resource.
Mm. Well, that's not the one I'm thinking about because he didn't write such stuff.
Okay. All right.
He was a Southern patriot.
Well, I think that's one of the tricks that the Jews use is to put all the blame on the bankers and have this illusion that the Zionists are fighting the Jews and the Jews are fighting the bankers and the Zionists are fighting the Jews and vice versa.
Well, no, that's not true. I quoted a source last night that A. Homer that wrote in 1933 for a Catholic publication, Bolshevism and Judaism, and he basically elucidated that the Zionists and the bankers were in bed together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, one time I wrote to the National Archives, and they sent me some stuff directly from some type of a Marine Expeditionary Force that outlined basically 95% of the Russian Commissars were Jews.
Oh, absolutely, and I have a lot of there's some original Russian sources on my on my website, on the Mein Kampf site, that get into that too.
Okay. Do you mind if I ask you a couple questions about that Mein Kampf project?
Sure.
Okay. Let me sit down here. Okay. Earlier, when you were reading from Mein Kampf, I was told by someone on the chat that it was the Murphy.
Yes, that's the only translation I use.
Okay. What about the Ford translation?
I don't know it.
Okay. All right. I would recommend to you the Ford translation and also his book entitled Mein Kampf, A Translation Controversy.
When was the Ford translation made and by who?
I want to say 2009, I believe.
Hmm.
Here. I don't have a copy of it yet. I haven't been able to purchase it. It'll just give me a moment to find it. Oh, and I would also like to direct your attention to the official National Socialist English translation of Mein Kampf done in the Reich that was actually given to British and American POWs.
Well, that would make me wonder right there.
That would make me suspected right there. I got what you mean now. I'm thinking the wrong way around. I heard you the wrong way around.
Oh, okay.
Why is the Murphy translation to be criticized? I'd like to know.
Well,
I'm just
you know, it's like the Bible, for instance. We don't just go by one text. We read them all. You know, it's textual criticism of Mein Kampf.
Okay.
I think it's important.
It would be important if there were more than one valid source. Yeah, you know, Murphy's translation is the only source that I know of. I didn't know about the Ford translation that has no political axe to grind. I mean, he couldn't have known the outcome of the war in 1938, right?
No. But I believe that he actually left. He became disaffected with the National Socialist government and left before the completion of his manuscript. I'm not exactly sure. That's what I've been led to believe from what I've read. Let's see. Mein Kampf, the Ford translation.
Well, it claims to be unexpurgated, the Murphy translation, which means it's more or less complete, right? And there's also claims that it was endorsed by Hitler himself as the translation of Mein Kampf in English.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, their National Socialist translation into English was actually by the Reichs. The National Socialist Propaganda Department in 1937 published an English version, and it relied heavily on Murphy.
Okay.
I just wanted to direct your attention to it.
Yeah, no, it would be good for a lot of things he said to get the nuances of the language and see if it could be understood differently. But for the most part, I compare it. Mannheim actually complained in the foreword to his translation that Hitler was a babbling idiot, and I'm paraphrasing. And then he translated them in a manner which made him appear to be a babbling idiot.
And what was his nationality?
I'm
English.
I'm persuaded
he was an Englishman.
No, I'm talking about Mannheim.
I'm persuaded that he was a Jew.
Oh, feature that.
Now I haven't seen his birth certificate or anything, but I'm persuaded that he was a Jew. I could translate Paul and make him sound like a babbling idiot. Any Greek reader can, but that don't mean that it's true. And then say, oh, he's a babbling idiot. Look at what he said. it's obviously biased. As soon as I picked up the Mannheim translation and read the introduction to it, it's obviously biased. But that's the full text of the Murphy translation with the original pagination from the edition that I have, which is a reprint of the 1939 edition by the company that first printed it. Blackhurst and somebody, or Blodgett, or I forget their name. But that's the pagination on my site is the original pagination from that edition.
Okay.
So I have all the text. I have a PDF that was actually – I stole it from somewhere else. I might have a couple of PDFs up there. And I have all the text in a Drupal database that's searchable, which is why I did it. And you could trust the pagination if you wanted to quote from it, which is why I did that.
Something else I wanted to ask you is are you familiar with the Zweites Buch? Hitler's second book?
I have a copy of it, I think, somewhere. I'm not sure if I really trust it. I haven't read enough about it. I haven't had the time to spend on it.
Okay.
But I think I have a reproduction of it somewhere on my PC.
Okay. There's
300,000 other files I got to get to, right?
Yeah. Okay, I was just wondering. I personally, for what it's worth, believe that is an authentic historical document. I've read Mein Kampf and tried to find everything that Hitler ever wrote, all of his speeches. You know, I've got My New Order by Hitler, and the phraseology and everything in the book just seems distinctly Hitlerian to me.
Okay.
For whatever that's worth.
I believe that Table Talk is straight trash.
Oh, anything that Martin Bormann and Janaut had their fingers in must immediately be dismissed as spurious.
It's actually everything in Table Talk is absolutely against what Hitler believed in Mein Kampf.
Yes.
And I have a video on my site of a German soldier presenting Mein Kampf as Hitler's gift to the German people after Hitler rose to power. So I'm persuaded that he did not ever recant anything that he said in Mein Kampf.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely agree, and I make the case for that as well in a book that I'm writing about Hitler.
Great. You'll find that the premise for my site is that Hitler was a good Christian man and defending a good Christian nation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm one-fourth German, so I'm slightly biased. I'm actually a little more than one-fourth German, so I'm slightly biased.
All right. Well, thank you for...
No, thank you.
Bill.
I hope we get to talk more in the future.
Sure. I have I'll just ask questions as they come to mind. If anybody else doesn't have anything they'd like to interject. Do you know anybody who translates German into English?
I know somebody that might have access to a German translator.
Okay, because, you know, there's, through my studies into the Christianity of the Reich, positive Christianity during the Third Reich, I've come to find that there's just a vast amount of Christian books that were written during that time from a National Socialist perspective, and I think they would give us a wealth of insight into the mind of the German National Socialist Christian at that time, and they're not in English. They're all in German.
If you come to my Euro forum that I have here on Thursday, on this same talk show program, I have a Euro forum, and there's one German gentleman that is usually there, and he's also in Eli's Sunday forum. He's been visiting. He goes by Bavaria Man. And he's a pretty intelligent man. He's actually an astronomer, and he'll be here, I'm sure, on Thursday at noon Eastern. Usually my Euro forum's at 2. I'm doing it at noon this week because I'm going right out of town when it's over. But if you can't make it this time, I mean, we could make it another time. I'm sure he would. He might be able to help you, or at least maybe guide you in the right direction. He's fluent.
Right.
He's fairly fluent in English and in German.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
He might know somebody that could help you find a translator or somebody to work with. And yes, I'm sorry. I just looked at the screen and I feel bad because. There's a fluent Peter Liu in the forum right now is fluent in German.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I see him here. Yeah, my connection keeps going in and on and off with in the chat.
Yes, Peter Liu in the forum. He's here with us pretty regularly, and he's very fluent in German.
Oh, excellent. You know, I think these German books that I've been directed to are fairly. Small. I mean, none of them are all that big. It would maybe take somebody who's fluent. Oh, I don't know. I've never translated anything, so I guess I wouldn't even venture to guess. But I wouldn't think that they would be that great, large of a task.
I have a lot of books that were translated from German into English that were provided to me by a good friend that are going to go up on the Mein Kampf site as I get time. Yeah, you know, it's an ongoing project, right? Let me go look at, I'm going to go dig some of the titles of them out. That they're in JPEG format, and I have to arrange them on web pages, and eventually I will OCR them all and have them converted to text. German labor service, Fritz Edel, E-D-E-L. A lot of these were republished by the Terramar Publications, Terramar Office, Berlin. Republished from Liberty Bell Publications. That's one of them. There's a bunch of them here. I have to. German
are
law.
You,
German law.
Chip, are you familiar with RJG Enterprises in Lincoln, Nebraska?
No. I'm
Third
not.
Reich book?
No, I'm not.
Okay,
I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I've only been out for 14 months.
Oh, I see.
And all my websites and all my radio programs and everything I've done, I think I've done my time's been pretty busy for 14 months.
Sure.
So I there's a lot that I haven't had the chance to check to pursue yet.
Okay. Well, I would just like to draw your attention to ThirdReichBooks.com, and they have a lot of English reprints of German books. And I think this guy who translated, I'm not sure his name, but for some reason I want to say that Ray Cowdery has something to do with this. And he's the guy who translated Ich Kämpfe from German to English.
Translated what? I'm sorry.
Ich Kämpfe, I Fight.
Okay.
It's a handbook for new enrollees in the NSDAP, 1943. I Fight.
Okay.
It's excellent.
Well, I have all these are all social type books, you know, social welfare in Germany, German law, German economics, German professions.
Mm-hmm.
There's about maybe a dozen of them or so, and they're all going to go on a Mein Kampf site eventually.
Oh, excellent.
First in pictures and then later down the road in text.
Are you familiar with the individual that is selling books on ABE and mostly, and he calls his company I Fight? Is that the same person you're talking about?
I'm not sure. I couldn't tell you. I know that the guy who translated I Fight is Ray Cowdery, and I for some reason, you know, I really want to say that he translates very faithfully from the Germany. It doesn't seem biased at all.
But does he have a book company that he sells from?
Perhaps. Oh, yeah, perhaps it is USM Incorporated.
Okay.
Rapid City, South Dakota.
Well, wait, what part of the country do you live in?
I live in Southern California.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
You're down here near Pilgrim.
Yeah. You don't get to Louisiana much, I don't imagine.
No. No, I've been to Alabama once.
Poor guy.
Never to Louisiana.
Where's Brett? Is Brett still here? We have somebody in a forum here from Alabama, but I think he's gone for the night.
Oh. Yeah, that was nice. Nice state.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to have to go. I've thoroughly enjoyed the program tonight, and I trust I'll see everybody tomorrow night.
Okay, Gerald, thank you, and I will see you tomorrow night. And
absolutely, Gerald. May God be with you.
Thank you. Good night. Jocko okay. says good night to everybody, too.
Take care. Bless you. Well, Obi, I think you've been on Identity. How did you find Identity 8 years ago?
Okay, I started out as just, you know, a racist skinhead. I was a disenfranchised youth and ended up getting in trouble doing, stupid stuff that kids do. And I ended up going to juvenile hall, where, of course, I was outnumbered, 30 to 1 by non-whites here in Southern California. I wasn't raised a racist, but, I immediately became a racist when I was thrust into that cesspool.
You want to know what I used to tell guys that came into prison that were like that? That if they weren't racist in 3 months, they were queer. That's what I told new white guys that came into prison that couldn't understand the whole racial thing.
That's a good estimation of it. I think it's a little bit different here in California because our prison and jail system is racially based. It's always you're split into ethnic groups whether you desire to be or not. There's big time racial politics in the California state prison system. I mean, if you even play a game of pinochle with a Negro, the whites are going to stab you to death.
Right. That's the way it should be. And the federal prisons are self-segregated like that. But the feds, the cops, they try to mix things up.
They'll test you quick.
The cops will test you and see if they can get you into that cube with that Negro or do this or do that.
Well, on the lower levels, they're starting to because I guess the federal courts mandated racial integration. But they can do that on the level one yards. They might be able to do it on the level two. Level three is cell living in California. And there's no way you're going to place a skinhead in the cell with a Crip and there's not going to be a knife fight. So they'll try it on 1 yard on a level three. And I guarantee you they won't try it on a level four supermax because that's where I've done all my time. And, you know, in a level four, there's a thing called in California called the no hands policy where you're not allowed to fist fight with anybody. If you have a problem, go stab the guy or shut up about it. So it's very serious there, and racial politics are taken very seriously. So I get out of juvenile hall when I'm a kid, you know, as a ward of the court. I started reading racist literature. I read the Turner Diaries. And then my little brother was in California Youth Authority, and he ended up sending me some Christian Identity literature. I believe it was Who Are the Israelites or something of that nature. And he also sent me Sheldon Emery's Heirs of the Promise. That's what started it all for me. I read Heirs of the Promise, and it just all made perfect sense to me. And ever since then, I began searching for biblical truth and God's truth. And I went to prison for hate crime and weapons charges, and I ended up stabbing a child molester within a month of me being there. So I did 21 months in the hole altogether. And while I was in there, all I did was study the Identity. All I did was write to churches, order books, and get books from my family and study and argue with Odinists and their ilk to better...
I've been there and I've done that.
to better hone my witnessing weapons, if you will.
No, that's great. We have a lot of similar experiences. So how did you find this program?
I found this program. I had actually spoken with the Kinsman on the phone, who's here in Southern California, who told me to look up Pastor Dan. And so I looked him up, and then somehow it brought me to TalkShoe. Maybe the guy told me here, get on TalkShoe. And then, I, of course, from just looking around on the pages, I found your site or your call, and I recognized the name because my brother, who's in prison right now for a hate crime, asked specifically by name for your literature. And I sent him something that I think I downloaded off of Emma Heiser. And then I actually sent Emma Heiser some Federal Reserve notes and asked him to forward some literature to my brother who's in prison.
Great. Send me his address, and I'll send him some. I'll print my blog or something for him.
Oh, that would be excellent. I do have your email now here, WM Fink.
Yeah.
see here. Okay, Christ. Okay. Okay, excellent. Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, and you know what I am going to try to do is attend some sort of Bible college and take a lot of Greek. I would actually like to do or help with a translation of the Septuagint into some type of Anglo-Israel version.
Yeah, it's a thought that's been in the back of my mind, but I don't like to talk about, you know, I don't like to express my full plans all the time, because then when you can't get something done and people anticipate it.
Sure. I like to say it because then it makes me do it.
Yeah. I really never planned on translating the whole New Testament, to be honest with you. I translated Paul. I wanted to translate Paul because I knew from reading from my Greek study that I could effectively defend Paul against all of his critics and his critics and identity. I don't care about his critics that are fags and Jews. That's where his critics and identity get their material from. Well, I knew I could defend it, so I translate Paul, and I sent a couple of copies out to a few people, and a gentleman, a brother in Minnesota, types the whole thing, and types my 1,250 footnotes. I was like, wow, I didn't expect nobody to do that. So I took it, and I proofread it, and I made a lot of changes and sent it back to him, and he typed up all the changes. Then I said, well, I may as well go translate Luke. So I translated Luke and 2,500 footnotes, which you don't see online. And he typed all that up for me. And I figured, well, I'm going to try for the rest of the New Testament before I get out of prison. So I translated it, but I have notes for my John and Matthew translation, but they're not typed yet. So that's, you know, once I get all my websites squared away, I'm going to start work on that. But
have you considered adding any type of illumination or artwork to your manuscript?
Well, no, I haven't, because I'm not an artist, and to impose on anybody and not knowing anybody, I really haven't done it. But I'm thinking about this month going to – I've been trying to get my work published, and I've been rebuffed twice, and I might just take at least my New Testament translation and go to Lulu and see what happens with that. And I have a finished volume of Paul all by himself with all my notes. And I have a finished volume of Luke, Luke and Acts, all by itself with all my notes. But, I can't get – it's hard to get a publisher for people of our persuasion, that's for sure, I guess.
Sure. Well, when I email you with my brother's address, then I'll you'll have my email. If you have any thoughts regarding some type of at least a cover page, illuminated cover page.
I would love a cover page, because if I could get one soon, because I'm going to go to Lulu probably when I get back from Virginia next week. I hate to pressure anybody, but I've had
to wait. Well, I'm sure that there would be subsequent additions. I just wanted to introduce the idea to you. A lot of our brothers – here in the area are accomplished artists, and I myself draw heraldry and Celtic knotwork, and I do a little bit of illumination.
And I'm always looking for stuff like that for websites. Always. I'm being honest, and I would love original stuff, and I'll give, credit for it.
Okay.
I got no money to give for it.
Christian artwork?
Oh, yeah, definitely for my websites. Yeah,
I can tell you a great deal of what our church has done here in Southern California. We're all most of us are pretty accomplished artists, and our artwork generally always glorifies Christ. And,
there's a few guys, that have been one. Yeah, a couple of guys made videos for me, and they're on YouTube. And a couple of guys made little drawings here and there, and I use them where I can. But it's artwork is always. I'm always. I like certain types of artwork that I'm really. If you go look at Chris DeGhenny, you'll find a lot of 15th century German woodcuts and 16th century German woodcuts that are anti-Semitic. And
sure.
You'll find Gustav Dore and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like stuff that not just everybody has, you know.
And
you'll find some Celtic
artistic
knotwork.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I'm sorry, and you'll find some Celtic knotwork. That's all I was going to say.
Okay. I forgot what I was going to say, but, you know, with the Celtic knotwork thing, would you be able to actually make some type of a thing on your page there that has artwork strictly from Identity Christians?
Yeah, I could make up a page like that. Why not?
Oh, excellent. Yeah, well, okay.
I got like eight websites associated with Christogenia, associated
okay.
with my main. Christogenia.org is my main site. The Mein Kampf site is only a side project.
Okay. All right. Well, if I send you those files, is it okay in JPEG?
At any peg, I can do anything.
Okay. All right. When I email you, I'll start forwarding some of those files and so that artwork to you.
Yeah,
that'd
be great. I'd appreciate that. If I don't use it, I'll use it on Clifton's site or whatever.
Okay, and I remember what I was going to ask you. Have you ever seen an artist's depiction of Numbers 25, or the story of Phineas?
Well, no, I haven't. I mean, I don't.
All right. Well, my brother did one, so I'm sure you'll enjoy that. I'll send that as well.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. All right. Bill, thank you for taking my call. And
thank you.
It's been very enlightening. I do have to go here. So when's your next program?
If you go to forum.christogenia.org, Pilgrim keeps a real good schedule of not only my programs, but of all the seed line ministers or pastors or whatever on teachers on TalkShoe. But my next program, well, tomorrow night is a program that's not mine. It belongs to this group of listeners. It's the Christoleos Forum Call, and that's at 8 p.m. And then my next program, I'm off this weekend. And usually I'm on with Eli James on Friday nights and on Saturday nights, on both those nights. And then I do a program with Sword Brethren, usually about either Nazi Germany, Weimar Germany, or the Bolshevik Russia, and that's on Sunday nights.
Okay, I caught part of that one.
And okay. You know, I have an event schedule on Christogenia that's kept up to date
on my
main site. Okay, and you'll see. I'm just taking next weekend off. I'll be here Thursday afternoon at noon on this call ID. Because every program has a different call ID on TalkShoe. I'll be here Thursday at noon on this call, all right, with the Euro Fellowship program, and there'll be probably 4 to 6 or 7 people from Europe here on the call from Britain and Germany.
You said it's at 12 o'clock p.m.?
12 o'clock Eastern time, yes, p.m. on Thursday. And then because I'm taking – Eli will be on Friday and Saturday night without me, but with Greg Howard instead of me. But I'm taking Friday and Saturday and Sunday off, so I won't be back until Monday. I'm going to Virginia to see my son, my grandkids.
All right. Okay.
I haven't had a weekend off from TalkShoe since Eli – I got home from prison December 8th, and Eli just stuck the cane out and grabbed me by the neck, and I was here December 13th. I haven't had a weekend off yet. And it's 14 months, so I need one. I probably need one anyway.
All right. Okay, well, Christ bless you, sir, and all of your listeners.
Thank you, Logie. Bless you.
Okay.
Take care. James, I know. I ignored you all night. I'm a bad boy.
I can't believe I'm finally unmuted.
Well, you're below the line. When there's a lot of people here, you're always on the bottom, and I don't even see you, so I don't think about you. I'm being honest. I don't know why, but when you call, with your name, you go up to the top, but when you call with your place, yeah, you know, with where you're from, you're on the bottom.
Mm.
So I thought I just, I felt bad. I thought I'd say hello to you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I wanted to tell Gerald hi, and what's the lady? She's still on there.
Pilgrim?
But, yeah, Pilgrim, just tell her hi, and all you guys. It's been very interesting. I just couldn't tell them hi is all.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm sure they appreciate it.
Well, I'm sucking it up. I guess about everybody's about gone again, maybe. Or there's still some on. But I think most of them got off, or this Pilgrim and all of them are still on there.
I guess Serpent, son of Hellslayer, doctrines of men make the word of no effect. That's what he's trying to say, Patricia. That's all.
Oh, is Patty on there too? Hi there, girl.
I figure that's Dungeons and Dragons meets Christian Identity or something. Serpent, son of Hellslayer. Patricia said hello.
Hi back. I guess she's not live, or I guess, I don't know. I don't know nothing about this stuff. I guess there's different forums, or all I know is I'm just on my phone.
Oh, well, sorry I said yeah there, Pilgrim. Sorry I said yeah there for that criticism, but I'm sure you're a big woman and you can handle it.
It's interesting. There's another Mein Kampf, too, I didn't know about.
Pilgrim's here. Frederick's here. Frenchman's here. Patricia's here. South Bend. I guess Patricia wants me to read you the whole list of the people that are here. Six guests. Warrior, son of David, and the Overcomer, who never says anything, but he or she is here. And Patricia wants me to explain how the chat works. You need a computer, James. If you got a computer, you could be here and listen to the program and chat with the people by typing to them and...
It's not going to happen. I just have to be satisfied with what I get.
Go. You could go to the library, though.
Hey, I can't even keep up with, just like Dan Gaiman, Christian Identity Ministries or whatever it is, they're going to be down here in Oakhurst. I'm going to try to go to the 13 and see Gray. Clark Gray or something. He's one of the preachers. From what I've read so far, he's good. It's not often that they, you know, come within 50 miles of the house all the way from Missouri. I think they're based in Missouri, about 100 miles from my daughter. I'm so far behind. Can't keep up with it.
Well, you got to pick and choose.
Oh, I am. Well, just like Preston Eby's very good. He's about 90 years old. He's got some beautiful stuff, but just like him, I'm 7-8 months behind on his newsletter. But like I said, I just can't keep up with it. Too good to keep up with American Free Press. Every time I turn around, another one of those is here. Either that, just like the last... The Idaho Observer. I haven't even got into reading it yet from the last one I got. There's so much stuff. I don't see how you guys keep up with it. No wonder you don't have time to do nothing else.
Yeah, and I don't keep up with it. A lot of stuff slips by me that I'd like to turn around and grab, but there's always something else new coming. So I guess I get to what Yahweh, what God gives me to get to, or what I'm allowed to, or whatever.
I look at it, you know what, I agree with that. I totally agree with what I think he wants, trying to you know, I just try to do what he wants or whatever.
Yep, none of us can do everything.
Plus, I try to keep up with the Modesto paper and the Fresno Bee, the, you know, the Jew Lion bastards and the Merced Sun Star. You know, I try to keep up with, there's so much stuff going on, just mind-boggling. Everything's unraveling, and that's for damn sure. You try to wake people up, and I don't know what the hell. Of course, we've been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah, it's hard.
They just don't want to listen yet. And I guess Yahweh is going to open their ears one of these days. But
well, when he taps them on the shoulder, they'll wake up. That's when it's time. But you don't know that, so you got to run your mouth, right?
I guess you're right.
That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I think you're right. We have to talk. Just like today, I had four CDs for a church out of Washington. I can't think about it. Well, in fact, I don't even have it down now. And then I had American Free Press, and I turned it on, all that stuff on. There were four bikers, two guys with their old ladies riding their Harleys, came into town today, and I couldn't help it. I had to go lay it on them. I do it every chance I get.
Okay.
Trying to wake people up.
Well, I guess I'm going to bring this call to a close on that note.
Okay, Yahshua bless all of you guys and keep up the good work and see you guys later.
Thank you, and thank you, Pilgrim, and thank you, everybody, and may Yahweh bless you. Take care. Good night, everybody.